Welcome back to our study. We are reaching chapter number 7 today in Esther. And so we're going to pick right up where we left off and remember that Mordecai was lifted up by the king. And we said chapter 6 was kind of a turning point because the king remembered through not being able to sleep and by hearing the chronicles read to him, he remembers or finds out about Mordecai and remembers that nothing was done for him. And so he uses Haman's pride against him to lift up Mordecai. And so Haman now had to walk through the city with him, dressed in the king's royal robes and the crown and on his horse. And so the very person that Haman wanted to kill, God worked through that to lift him up. And so we are now, if you remember too, Esther is trying to talk to the king about the edict, but she goes and has dinner with him, with King and Haman, and says, the king says that he will give her any request that she has, that she makes, up to half of the kingdom. And so she says, if you remember, we left it the last time we saw Esther, she said, come back to dinner tomorrow. So she has one dinner with him, says, you know, if you will grant me this wish, will you come to dinner tomorrow again? And so that's where we're going to pick up now. So there's already been this great scene with Haman and Mordecai. So Haman is just upset about what he had to do for Mordecai. And now he's getting ready to go back to dinner again with the king and Esther. And we're going to see what happens there. So we're actually going to read the end of chapter 6 again, verse 14. It says, while they were yet talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried to bring Haman to the feast that Esther had prepared. Now, chapter 7. It says, so the king and Haman went into the feast with Queen Esther. And on the second day, as they were drinking wine after the feast, the king again said to Esther, what is your wish, Queen Esther? It shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even to half of my kingdom, it shall be fulfilled. So the king is reminding her, hey, I'm going to give you what you want. What is your, notice he says, what is your wish? And what is your request? So he puts that out there again for her. He's like, come on, tell me what you want, you know. And so look at now verse 3. Notice how Queen Esther approaches this. Then Queen Esther answered, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be granted me for my wish and my people for my request. So notice what she's doing. She's not just coming right out and saying, how dare you, you know, put out this edict. Because remember, the edict was done by Haman, but it was signed with the king's signet ring. Remember, he gave over his signet ring to Haman and let Haman do whatever he wanted. So notice she says, if I have found favor. Notice how she's slow playing this and she's doing it in a way that is humble to the king. And she says, let my life be granted for my wish and my people for my request. So she has something for both. Here's my wish and my request. And notice what she says in verse 4. She says, for if we have been sold, I and my people to be destroyed, to be killed. Or I'm sorry, she says, for we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Remember, those were the words that were used in that edict. If, notice what she says, if we had been sold merely as slaves, men and women, I would have been silent, for our affliction is not to be compared with loss to the king. So she says, this is not just a matter of being sold into slavery, because if that were the case, I wouldn't even bother you. But she says, we have been sold to be killed. Because remember, Haman essentially bought this by bribing the king and saying, hey, if you'll give this over to me, I will give you, what was it, 10,000 talents of silver. And so essentially they were sold, but they were sold to be killed, not to just be enslaved. And so she says, if it was merely a matter of being enslaved, we would take that and just not say anything. But she says, no, we're going to be killed. But notice, again, how she's kind of doing this very humbly, but very, very cunningly as well. Notice verse 5. Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther, who is he and where is he? Who has dared to do this? So he's realizing, whoa, what are you talking about? Why is your life at risk? Why are your people at risk? So he still doesn't know. He hasn't put two and two together yet of what exactly she's talking about. He just sees it as, well, the queen is threatened. That's a threat to me. If the queen is threatened, it's a threat to the king. So who is doing this? Because I want to do something about it. And look at what Esther says. Here's her courage now. She says, and Esther said, verse 6, a foe and enemy, this wicked Haman. And then Haman was terrified before the king and queen. So you wonder when Haman picked up on what she was saying. But now she just points it out and says, it is him. This foe, this Haman is the one that's doing this. And Haman knows exactly, okay, maybe I went too far. But notice he's terrified. So verse 7. It says, and the king arose in his wrath from the wine drinking and went into the palace garden. But Haman stayed to beg for his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that harm was determined against him by the king. So notice now the one who wanted to kill the Jews is now begging the Jew to save his life. And so what we see here is, the first thing we need to see here from this is that our sin will be found out. The things that we think we do out of pride, because we've seen Haman acting out of nothing but pride. All he cares about is himself. That Mordecai wouldn't answer to him or wouldn't just bow to him. Like, how does that hurt Haman if Mordecai refuses to bow to him? It doesn't. It doesn't do anything but affect his pride. But it was so far and so bad that Haman wanted to kill Mordecai. And now notice, because Mordecai wouldn't bow to Haman, Haman is now throwing himself at the queen and begging for his life, begging for her to save him. And so we have to understand that our pride is sin, and our pride will lead us into more sin. Pride itself is sin, but it will lead us into more sin. And we can be sure that sin will be found out. Scripture is very clear in that over and over again. I could read scripture after scripture that tells us that the consequences of our sin will be found out. And then the other thing we have to remember is that the consequences that come from the sin, we don't get to choose that. We do have a choice in our sin, but we don't have a choice in the consequences. And often it's when the sin comes out or is found out, or the consequences of our sin come, we immediately go like Haman and we want to beg for mercy. And notice if Haman would have just given Mordecai mercy and grace and said, you know what? Well, that's a shame that he won't bow to me, but that's on him, and just moved on. But Haman took that slight and put it on all of the Jewish people and gave no mercy to anyone. But now he is begging for mercy himself. And often that's what our sin will do. Is sin and pride will lead us into treating others, lifting ourselves up or treating others bad or poorly. And then when the consequences come back on us, then that's when we beg for mercy. That's when we beg for grace. We're not good at giving it, but boy, when our sin comes out and we face the consequences, we are quick to beg for it. And so we have to understand on this side, what Haman should have understood is if we would see our sin, recognize our sin, not get caught up in pride, but rather confess our sin and try to honor God with what we do, then yeah, we're still going to sin. We're not going to be perfect, because that's impossible to do in this life. But we need to understand that, or think ahead and say, I don't want to deal with the consequences of this. So I'm going to seek to honor God. I'm going to seek to give grace and mercy and things like that so that this doesn't happen, so that I don't have to face the consequences of my sin. And so that's what we have to learn from this, is we see what happens to Haman, and we need to not be deceived and think that we're the exception to that, that our sin won't be found out, that we won't face consequences of that. And so we have to be like, we have to get real with our sin, because it's sin that will destroy our life. And then the consequences of that can spiral out. Like, the sin that I do will affect my wife. It will affect my daughter. It could affect the church that I serve in, the ministry that I have here. Like, all those things, it can affect my parents. It can affect my grandparents. Like, it can affect my friends. You know, we don't get to choose the consequences of that. But if we're mindful of that and we say, you know, I don't want to deal with that pain. I don't want to deal with that fallout. I don't want to deal with that collateral damage. Then make our decisions and make our choices and how we live our life and how we act in light of that. And say, you know what, I don't want to affect them in that way. But man, we have to be real and deal with our sin so that it doesn't destroy our lives and destroy the lives of the people that we love. And that's what we see with Haman, is he didn't think that through, and we're going to see what happens to him. So the first big thing that we need to talk about here, the first big application from this, is we need to be real with our sin and confess our sin. And we need to be people of mercy and grace on the front end rather than begging for it on the back end after it's too late. So that's the big takeaway from this. But secondly, I think we see the courage and the humility of Esther, how she addressed this in a humble way. She didn't just come right out pointing fingers. And we've just seen how she has kind of been humble, how she's approached the king all the way through. She was very humble to him in how she presented this. And she did it in a way that gained his favor. And so that worked in her favor to get him on her side, so that then when she named Haman, then it was obvious the king had to do something about it. And so we can see that we do need to have courage, and we do need to speak the truth, but we can see that the way that we do that does matter. And I think a lot of times, even in today's culture, I hear this, and I've probably even said it, but we say things like, I'm just telling the truth, I've got to tell it like it is. But I don't think that, I think that we need to be mindful of how we do that. You know, it's like the old saying, you know, we catch a whole lot more flies with sugar than with vinegar. And so how we approach things does matter. Yes, we need to be people of truth. Yes, we need to have courage and speak up. But when we're being truthful with people, when we're being honest with people, then we need to do it in a humble way. And I think I can also take this a little bit further and say, when we're sharing the gospel with people, I think we have to be humble in how we present that and say, you know, instead of just blasting people and just saying, you know, you're wicked, you're sinners, you're on your way to hell, you know, that kind of thing, which those things are true. But how can we do that in a way that is that will draw them to the truth rather than just, you know, them putting up a wall and walking away and turning away? Let the gospel message itself be divisive and be hard hitting, things like that, be offensive. It is offensive to when you talk about sin. But I think we have to approach people with love and with humility. And so that then we can share that message with them, because at least hopefully the message of redemption will draw them in rather than just, again, them putting up a wall. So I think we do have to be that courageous and truth tellers, but in a humble way. So those are the two kind of takeaways, and we're going to deal with the fallout in the next video. But those are really the two things that I want us to focus on today, is we need to get real with our sin and confess it sooner rather than later. Think through the consequences beforehand so that you can think about what's going to happen before the destruction happens. But then also how we do present truth and be courageous in how we present truth, both to believers and to non-believers, but do it in a humble way. I think the way that Esther approached this is a good picture of how we can get people to listen to us and to essentially to get on our side and to hear what we're having to say rather than just turning them off. So I think chapter 7 is a good picture of both of those things. And so in the next video, next week, we will pick right up here where we left off with Haman and see what happens to him. So God bless you. Hope y'all have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next week.